ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, the opposition leader, Susan Lee, finally announced the coalition's emissions policy at a press conference yesterday. With the big message, affordability is prioritised over addressing climate concerns. She confirmed that future coalition governments would scrap the net zero target along with green energy incentives and lift the ban on nuclear power, and that government subsidies might also go to new coal-fired power stations. The opposition leader insisted that the coalition is not anti-renewables, but they, to use her words, have to be in the right place and they have to be balanced by baseload power. She was on the ABC's AM program this morning to further sell the new policy.
I want to reassure people listening who care about the climate that I do too, which is why we have dedicated emissions reduction goals in our plan. And I want to make this clear. Emissions will be reduced on average year on year for every five-year period under our nationally determined contribution. And we'll do our fair share, considering the real performance of comparable countries. And we'll do this emissions reduction as fast and as far as technology allows.
Although how is not entirely clear. But moving on, today Nationals leader David Littleproud also insisted the prospect of one day reaching net zero was still possible under the coalition government.
We can continue to reduce emissions, and then as technology evolves, the world sorts this out, and it's affordable technology. We'd adopt it. We're not closing our minds to that.
Well, the Prime Minister, Mr Albanese, used the Melbourne Metro launch today to slam the coalition's approach to climate change, calling them a clown show, and described the conflicting voices within the opposition on the issue like this.
It's a nonsensical policy, all designed just to try and keep people who fundamentally disagree with each other, from people who say that the science is completely wrong and climate change does not exist, to try and get a policy consensus between that and people who understand the science and say that we do support, we do need to move to net zero, and instead they've got this blancmange, this mess.
Well, joining us for tonight's Nightlife News Breakdown is Hugh Rimmington, National Affairs Editor at 10 News First. Hugh, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Phil, I think he's giving blancmanges a bad name.
I think blancmanges have always had a bad name, I must say.
He's got a good word for a blancmange.
No.
What is a blancmange? I don't
really,
even know.
Who really wants a blancmange? Look, before we get to the finalisation of the coalition and energy policy, you were on social media the other day. Take a look at some of the figures the opposition is basing their rejection of net zero upon, something The Guardian Australia's also looked into with some fact-checking. In particular, you focused on what Nationals leader, David Littleproud was saying about the cost to Australians of net zero.
Labor's net zero by 2050 is going to cost the Australian people $9 trillion.
How much?
$9 trillion.
Break that down for us.
That's $5,000 per Australian per year between now and 2050.
Hang on a minute. Aren't we just a little bit out? $9 trillion is $9,000 billion. Divide that by the rough current population, 28 million. Divide that by 25 years to 2050. Wait on, that's nearly $13,000 a year for every Australian, not $5,000. Why isn't he warning us about that? Possibly because $9 trillion is a ridiculously outlandish figure. We asked David Littleproud's office where it came from, and they said Net Zero Australia, a conglomeration of climate experts and economists. But Net Zero Australia has told us the $9 trillion figure does not come from them. They put the total cost at $300 billion. Divide by 28 million for population, by 25 for years, $428 per person per year. All paid for, all done. Just 3% of the
$9 trillion
being quoted by the Nationals leader.
Yes, well, Hugh, there are lots of such figures being bandied around, aren't there? I mean, Susan Lee, obviously, learning her lines or citing her lines tonight and today, saying that electricity costs have gone up, citing power bills are up 40%. But that figure comes from a report by the Page Research Centre itself, a think tank with links to the Nationals. A lot of experts disagree with this. Is the coalition policy based on accurate numbers and assumptions?
Well, I think the key thing is that it's interesting that in the 28 pages of the coalition's new policy document on this, there is no mention of the $9 trillion. So the thing that was the core of their argument just days ago has, I think they've been shamed into dumping that, but because that related to an entirely different set of figures, which involved, investment out to 2060, which included for the energy and products that we export, and that money comes from foreign investment, in fact, generates jobs and generates economic activity here. So, and that's because it's going to be very difficult for voters, for citizens to figure their way out in this because it is a fiendishly complicated area. It's based on a bunch of assumptions. It's based on prices. Who knows what the price of gas is going to be in 20 years' time, for one thing, still within the envelope of by 2050. There are so many variables that are in play. So Net Zero Australia, which is a group of universities and they get input from lots of places, including Princeton University in the US, energy is going to cost and require an enormous amount of investment because no power is free. So even if you just scrapped everything and go, if you reckon that new coal is the cheapest way, okay, go wall-to-wall coal. Almost all the coal-fired power generation we have in Australia at the moment will be long gone by 2050. So if you went wall-to-wall coal, you've got to build all these new coal-fired plants. That costs an amazing amount of money just on itself. And so the key test is how much more does net zero cost than simply producing energy without worrying about carbon abatement. If you say, look, I don't care about carbon, forget about it, but you still have to create energy. So what's the difference in price? And that's the one that Net Zero Australia says they put it at being approximately $300 billion across that time. Now, immediately you see people prop up, and they say, oh, but what about, poles and wires cost this much money? And what about this thing costs that much money? Yes, of course, everything costs money. But if you're putting, an energy generating source over here, you don't have to put it over there. So, it's not as if it's not costing you money, but you're not also spending somewhere else. So what you're looking for ultimately, if you look at net zero, is what is the net cost difference effect? Because that's the one that really is going to matter to the bottom line. And even then, if it's $300 billion, it's not nothing. Mm-hmm. But the argument should be about that, not about these other pie-in-the-sky figures. It's going to be really difficult for voters to figure out. And that's why the opposition, I think, is coming down to where it will come down to is this argument about power bills. And so you hear from Susan Lee repeatedly saying on 7:30 tonight, we will unashamedly prioritize affordable energy. So not prioritizing the planet, the environment, anything else, the priority, it's clearly in her words, she means it to be in her words, is affordable energy. So what is the cheapest form of energy going around? And then you get into an argument where you heard from the Australian Energy Council, which is all the producers of the energy, saying, actually, it's a transition to renewable. But, that's rejected by Susan Lee and plainly by the opposition now.
Yes, this area is bedeviled by complicated numbers and complex arguments and complex terminology. And at the end of the day, the argument's going to be one, I think, with much simpler messages, isn't it? Because people don't know what numbers to believe, quite frankly.
Yeah, look, that's true. And I think, there's a lot of commentary. It almost, if you'd just read most of the commentary, you'd think, well, we don't need to hold the next election. Mm-hmm. We already know the outcome. The coalition will be completely destroyed because they've lost everyone in this blancmange of a policy. It's not going to be quite like that. I suspect that, as most people would suspect, Susan Lee, although she was on 7:30 bravely saying that she guarantees, in fact, absolutely guarantees that she will lead the coalition in the next election.
What else could she say?
But what else can she say? She bravely sails into the wind, but. But let's assume she goes. If there is a person, because you don't feel as if Susan Lee, brave as she is in doing this, her heart's really in it. She said tonight on 7:30, among the things she said tonight is, I'm pro-renewables, she announced in the middle of this. So her heart's not really in it. But if you've got a sort of like a Tony Abbott-style leader who just mercilessly argues on the price of power, and that resonates with the audience, the voters. Mm. And if the, you know, because we're not, you know, things will happen between now and the next election which won't go the Labor government's way. They'll make mistakes. You know, just events, dear boy, events will come up and make it more difficult for them. And suddenly some of these arguments might start to get more traction. So I don't think it's necessarily, in raw political terms, necessarily the destruction of the Liberal Party and the conservative side of politics, but they can only do it by running a relentlessly well, certainly a negative argument regarding the environment and whether the electorate is ready for a relentlessly anti-environment argument, sort of thing.
Here's the question. According to the latest Redbridge Accent survey conducted for the Australian Financial Review published today, the coalition's primary votes down to a record low of 24%, and the two-party preferred figures show an improvement for the ALP on the May 3 landslide election win. So Ms. Lee's personal standings have continued their downward slide. Just 10% of people backing her as preferred Prime Minister. So, no, the polls aren't good, as you say, but that's not bothering Susan Lee, by the way.
Well, I'm not interested in polling, and I'm not interested in public commentary about polling. What I'm interested in is this plan that delivers affordable energy for households.
Oh, I was missing the old line coming out there, Hugh, which we had heard a million times. The only poll that counts is on election day.
Next election, and she will absolutely guarantee to be there leading the party into it.
Yes.
God bless her.
Anyway, it was an opportunity for Malcolm Turnbull, another leader, of course, destroyed by a Liberal leader, destroyed by ructions over energy policy. He was out and about giving his assessment of the lie of the land?
It's the same problem the coalition's been bedeviled with ever since 2009, which was the first time I lost the leadership of the Liberal Party over energy and climate. Basically, what has happened is that the right wing of the Liberal Party, which is consists of most of the Liberal Party nowadays, and the National Party, have turned what should be a matter of engineering and economics and facts into an ideological culture war issue. You know, 20 years ago, renewables were more expensive than burning coal, but we argued that we should pay the price to, you know, cut our emissions to save the planet. Now we're in the happy circumstance where the cheapest forms of new generation are renewable, above all solar. And the millions and millions of Australians that have solar panels on their roofs understand that. What you've got is a fact-free, reality-free culture war going on, and it is designed to gratify the right-wing media ecosystem dominated by Sky News, and that is basically what is now in charge of the coalition.
Mm. Yes, well, is Susan Lee making the same mistake as Malcolm Turnbull, do you think, appeasing the right at his own ultimate cost, or in this case her own ultimate cost?
Well, in 2009, as Malcolm Turnbull mentioned, I was in Canberra reporting at these things. I've got very clear memories of it. Is that Malcolm Turnbull did not appease the right in 2009 and got rolled by Tony Abbott. When he got back into power, he tried to hold the line on energy, and including going for pumped hydro, heavy investments there, which in fact have blown out way above the initial costs that he said that they'd cost us. What he was doing there really in terms of appeasing the right is that he relied wisely or unwisely in a kind of stitching up the Conservatives with people like Matthias Cormann and Peter Dutton and keeping them close, the old political adage, keep your friends close and your enemies closer, and in the end it didn't work for him. So he got cut down by the right. But I don't think he really appeased them, not on energy greatly. So what we've seen with Susan Lee is that she has done. She was fundamentally rolled. She's tried to stay on top of that particular spinning barrel for some time, probably for a few months. That will be about the effect of it, you would think. You know, if she suddenly starts going up in the polls, people like her, they like her pluck, who knows? They might still have her, but I think for a while. But it's almost inconceivable, you know, in the experience of just politics that you're going to see her lead into the next election, and particularly lead to victory. That there are other people with ambitions who want to carry this forward, and they're not going to go silent.
Hugh Remington's with us, leading the News Breakdown tonight, National Affairs Editor at 10 News First. It looks as though Susan Lee's also trying to outflank the right of her party by focusing on immigration herself before it gets brought up by others. She was asked by Sabra Lane on AM about it this morning.
The numbers need to be lower, and I've said that. I said that, well, months ago when I became leader. And that's because of the constraints that Australians are facing in their community, and how they're explaining it to me is that it's difficult to find the right commute to work at the right time. It's a challenge. Schools, hospitals, public transport, the condition of our roads, and you.
So immigrants are responsible, that is that today. What you're saying, for congestion, housing prices?
And if you look at all of the remarks that I've ever made on this subject, you will find that I've always said this is not the fault of any migrant or migrant community. I have consistently said that. It's the failings of governments, often state governments, to build the infrastructure to support the population.
Yes, well, of course, the problem here, Hugh, is that if you raise immigration, you've got to decide what you're going to do about it. And if you're going to lower immigration, you've got to say, well, who's not coming? And that's right. When it gets very tricky, isn't it?
And when you say she's trying to outflank the conservative side, really she's been, again, prodded along by Andrew Hastie, who's been out on social media saying Australians feel like strangers in their own country. This is the line he's been doing on immigration now for weeks, if not months. And immigration has been bubbling under. Obviously, we had those anti-mass immigration protests and so on, partly hijacked by neo-Nazis and other sorts of people. But it's definitely bubbling under as an issue. And it's, you know, certainly in the top four odd issues, because it gets bound into all those other issues like house prices and the rest of it. But you're quite right. Who do you get rid of? The Accent poll that you referred to, the Accent Redbridge poll that's in the Fin Review, notes that the leader most trusted to deal with the issue of immigration in the country is Pauline Hanson. That is a remarkable, remarkable historic moment when Pauline Hanson is the most trusted leader in Australia by a broad poll on any subject, and that there she is. I spoke to Pauline Hanson today, and she said...
Go on.
Yeah, well, you know, because... And she said, look, she's always had this plan. She's all for net zero, not net zero emissions, net zero migration. Births, deaths, broadly speaking, cancel each other out, broadly speaking. What she's aiming for then is that no migrants come in unless they're balancing migrants to go out, because of course Australians do migrate overseas all the time, and so that's it. Where are you going to cut? I said, you know, because the big chunks, family reunion, there are obviously students coming through, there are people here on temporary visas of various kinds, but they still obviously add up to people who want to get flats, people who want to rent things, people who get on in cars and, you know, can congest up the traffic and all the rest of it. Students, well, that's your university sector has now been made dependent on them. Most universities lose money. The ones that make money do it because they're on foreign students. Are you going to destroy that industry? Our largest non-primary industry.
Export industry, that's right.
Export industry is that industry. You know, you're going to wipe out that industry. You know, family reunion. You're going to get a lot of people voting against you because they can't bring family members out. That becomes very personal to people.
And if you knock off the backpack, if you knock off the backpackers, you knock off all those farmers who rely on them for casual labour.
That's so true. And the other thing, which I keep coming back to, is that with the ageing population, we've had royal commissions into aged care in Australia. We've had reports from CEDA, the economic think tank. We are desperately short of aged care workers and aged care facilities to deal with our aging population. If you go to any aged care facility in Australia, you will find that almost all the workers within it, the personal care workers, they call it, are migrants, usually almost always migrant women. And they've been doing those jobs. If you block that path, where are you going to put your mum and dad? Where are you going to go yourself if you're of that age? How's it working? These things matter. immigration and the scale of it post-COVID is a real issue. Make no mistake.
It is.
Sorting it is not easy. It's a much easier slogan than a solution.
No, I agree. It's easy to say, and people are concerned about it, but you know what you do about it is devilishly difficult, actually. All righty, just very briefly before you go, we've kept banging on about this COP conference in Adelaide next year, but I note Penny Wong at the weekend was asked by David Spears whether it really was going to cost between $1 and $2 billion, and she wouldn't answer. But anyway, it doesn't look as though we're going to get it anyway, because Turkey is digging its heels in, and Anthony Albanese says we're not co-hosting. So basically, it's just the next few days of this week which will decide the matter. The government might be in two minds about this as to whether they want it or not now, don't you think?
Well, it's hard to admit. You can't co-host with Turkey. Yeah. You could co-host with Indonesia or something. We're in the same time zone. You could do it in some ways. But Turkey, it becomes a bit nonsensical. Where are the major players going to go, to Turkey or to Australia? I think that Australia's argument is a good one, that they want to make a Pacific COP. They want to bring attention of the world to these island nations that, you know, literally face existential destruction. And because the world, it's not just Australia, the whole world needs to be brought to this emissions reduction, because of the top five national emitters of carbon, China, number one, has a net zero by 2060. United States, Trump says it's all a con, out of the Paris Agreement, makes no promises. India, by 2070. Russia, the fourth biggest emitter, says by 2060, but no one believes Putin's remotely interested in it. His argument is we're going to plant all these forests in Siberia and that will sort out the problem. But they're a major gas and, you know, and oil producer. Japan is the only one of the five emitting nations, major emitting nations, that has a net zero goal. So this is a problem, and this is what the COP is to try to do, is to get people, particularly if you focus on Pacific, and say all of the world has still got to lean into this, because the environmental issues remain the actual real issues, and that's going to be the collision point in our domestic politics when it's supposed to be all about what's going to deliver the cheapest power prices. There are other arguments that are in the mix.
Indeed. All right, Hugh. Terrific to talk with you. And thanks for your time.
All the best to you, Phil. Take care, mate.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.